Okay, I think we are live to the world on the internet. Let's make sure everyone in the chat room can hear us. We got some people in there. If you can hear us on the chat room, please let us know. And we are live with Dr. John Bergman in studio. How the heck are you doing?
Oh, buddy, really good. Thanks for inviting me back.
Oh, my goodness. Anytime you want to come back. Anytime. We love it.
Cool, man.
You're our favorite guest. We have no Kate today. We're minus somebody.
It seems weird. I miss her.
I know. There should be someone to your right. There's no one there. For those that are that don't know, Kate has a little bit of a cough and the hiccups, and she didn't want to be coughing and doing all the hiccuping on the radio show, so she's going to bow out of this one.
I think hiccups sound cute on the radio.
Yeah. It lends itself well, I think. Well, if you guys are interested, this is episode 375 of Extreme Health Radio, so I will do my best to take notes today of all the different things that Dr. Bergman talks about at extremehealthradio.com/375, and we broadcast live every Friday morning at 9 a.m. Pacific time. So if you want to join us in the chat room, you can do so at extremehealthradio.com/live, and you can make some friends in the chat room and have a good time in there and ask your questions to our guest. So that's always a great way to participate. And another really cool thing, too, is that Kate and I have sort of decided to go commercial-free for a while, or for as long as we possibly can, possibly forever, on extremehealthradio.com. So what that means to you is that we're going to have better conversations with our guests. We're going to have a lot more fun. We're not going to be taking breaks. Commercials, we feel, are very 1990s. I think we're all beyond commercials now. So what we're going to do is run a little bit of an ad before and at the end of the podcast. And all we're going to say is, if you would like to shop in our store, or if you would like to support us financially via Patreon or anything like that, there's about 9 or 10 different ways you can also support us in a non-financial way. Please go to extremehealthradio.com/join. And there's a link at the top right of our website, extremehealthradio.com/join. And you can learn about all the different health products that we sell in our store, about Patreon. And we would greatly, greatly, greatly appreciate you guys doing that. We're taking a bit of a risk by doing this. By taking this risk, we're trying to make a better show for you guys. So the store is how we make most of our money to be able to do these shows for free for you guys. So even if you don't have any money, you can also go onto that page, extremehealthradio.com/join, and you can learn how you can support us financially or non-financially as well. So we greatly, greatly, greatly appreciate you guys helping us and going to that page. It's very important. And we thank you so, so much for checking that page out. And as always, the podcast comes out a couple days later. And I wanted to let you guys know, too, if you want to sign up to our newsletter list and get our free bonuses to you, set up a really cool thing on our website. It's pretty cool. I don't know much about cell phones, but you can text Get Healthy to 33444. Can you believe that?
That's really cool.
And all of a sudden, you'll have access to all the stuff that we're offering.
Oh, neat.
Crazy, right? I don't even have a cell phone, but somehow that works. So, yeah, this is episode 375 with Dr. John Bergman. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, this is to talk about what we're talking about today, non-communicable diseases, is so vital to get this information out. Mm-hmm. I mean, people are literally going to be lied to and dying for just lack of knowledge.
Yeah, that happens a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That happens with just about everything that comes out, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So you've been doing a lot of study on non-communicable diseases recently?
Yeah. Well, what's wild is I hadn't even heard the term up until a few months ago. And then I thought, well, what is a non-communicable disease? It's a disease that you can't catch. You got to earn through lifestyle factors. And then when you came across this article that's talking about how it's going to wipe out the world's economy by 2030. So we got 15 more years, and the cost of treating non-communicable diseases will be over $47 trillion.
47 by 20, and by 2030.
By 2030. So we're coming up.
Wow.
I mean, it's like we're in a car driving towards a block wall at 100 miles an hour, and they're trying to pad the wall instead of saying slow the car down.
Yeah. So what are some examples of non-communicable diseases?
Heart disease.
Heart disease.
Okay. And they're listing, and this is, I mean, so frustrating. If you understand anatomy and physiology, they're listing high blood pressure as a disease. They're listing high cholesterol as a disease. They're listing atherosclerosis, okay? They're listing diabetes, mm-hmm. okay, type 2. They're listing pulmonary diseases, like chronic obstructive pulmonary diseases, which is a combination of asthma, emphysema, and bronchitis.
Okay.
And
is that what sleep apnea is?
Or
is
that sleep apnea is a weird condition that is unique to our animal species.
Oh, really?
It turns out that most animal species, when they sleep, they don't die from lack of oxygen.
Interesting. Yeah.
Well, so sleep apnea really, it doesn't really exist.
Because animals would be sleeping, they wouldn't be sleeping on their back, would they? They kind of sleep on their side.
Oh, they're going to sleep however they want. I mean, some animals sleep on their feet.
Yeah, yeah.
But sleep apnea, it has to do with sleep or breathing interruption patterns while you sleep. And that has to do with two different things, toxicity and deficiency. So there could be nerve pressure in the neck, upper back, or the control mechanisms that actually control respiration.
Uh-huh.
Or it could be an inflammatory response in the body. And when you're looking at these different non-communicable diseases or the NCDs, most of them are inflammatory responses. But okay. And the response that the World Health Organizations are doing are beyond belief. They're trying to get medications to people. And when you figure, and they're even recommending no salt, they're recommending eliminating trans fats, you know, which is a good idea.
So why are they trying to give medications for diseases that are uncommunicable or non-communicable? That's bizarre.
Well, the medical world, there was a brilliant article yesterday on Medscape. Uh-huh. On, and it was the best drugs that you can prescribe are lifestyle factors.
Okay.
And the physicians today, they don't feel skilled in suggesting lifestyle factors, and they feel that there's going to be a lack of compliance.
Really?
If you figure that all a physician would have to do is say, hey, look, drink 50% of your body weight in clean, healthy water a day. Mm-hmm. And that would reduce diabetes rates. It would reduce cancer rates. It would help oxygen to the system. It would reduce blood pressure issues. But they don't understand anything about just hydration.
So the fact that they don't feel comfortable is the reason why they're not recommending lifestyle remedies for these things.
The gist of the article was amazing because they're not trained in it. They don't feel comfortable and they don't have the time. So there was a number of different factors, but this translates over into the international community too. They don't feel that, see, we're exporting these diseases, the non-communicable diseases like cardiovascular disease, the pulmonary diseases, mental disorders are also listed as it.
Cancer would be right.
Cancer
being there, yeah.
Diabetes. Uh-huh. And so when you're looking at this group of diseases, they used to be diseases of wealthy countries, or they called them the Western diseases.
Okay.
But now, 80% of the deaths are occurring in developing nations.
Of these types of diseases?
Of these type of the non-communicable diseases.
Okay.
Because we're exporting not just our lifestyle food, we're also exporting our medical system.
I see. Uh-oh.
So when you go in and let's say you export polyunsaturated fats, uh-huh. okay, which is going to be the canola oil, the soy oils, the oils that we produce mm-hmm. to make it a tremendous profit for our you know, country.
Yeah.
But it's damaging because it causes the blood cells to clump together. And if you're having a diet high in polyunsaturated fats, your blood pressure has to adapt or it has to increase in order, because you have toxic blood that's not going to be carrying an appropriate amount of nutrients or oxygen.
So these are those plastic fats like canola oil and these types of things?
Yeah. Canola, soy, corn.
Corn oil.
Vegetable oils. All of those polyunsaturated fats.
It's going to make your blood pressure rise?
It has to. But when you think of it, why? Because the polyunsaturated fats, they cause the blood cells to get clumpy or sticky together.
Okay.
Also, dehydration causes the blood cells to get sticky or clumped together.
Okay.
And what that'll do, now let's say, because sodas are now being exported, and you get a kid in a developing nation, he's for sure going to reach for the Coca-Cola because of the advertisement instead of the, you know, the water.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
And it's both are about the same cost.
And I wonder, do those foods dehydrate you? Because most people are walking around dehydrated anyway, so they have that problem. And then they start taking these plastic oils and these things too. I mean, it's going to make their blood even more clumpy.
And guess what dehydration does to the blood cells? Causes them to clump together as well.
Yeah.
So when I'm looking at the World Health Organization's definition, okay, of non-communicable diseases, they list high blood pressure as a disease instead of an adaptation to a toxic deficient lifestyle.
Okay.
Now this is crazy. Okay. Because in our world, since we're exporting our toxic food, we're also exporting our medical system. So we're going in, and these people who are eating the polyunsaturated fats, dehydrating lifestyles, and I'm just picking on blood pressure just for now.
Yeah, this is one.
They're given a diuretic or a beta blocker, an ACE inhibitor, and what that does, those drugs lower blood pressure. But they also, you've got toxic blood, so it's going to decrease the function of blood, the oxygen and nutrients that's delivered to the entire system.
So the blood pressure, it's going to make them clump together, and that's going to be difficult for blood to pass through arteries. But then it's also going to make the blood not function properly because the oxygen can't get into the blood and
exactly
into the cells.
Exactly, and so the body is going to adapt to that by elevating the pressure.
Okay,
because I mean we're designed to have pressures that go up and down. By gosh, when I read the article, my pressure's going up.
Yeah, you're getting
mad. I'm pissed.
Getting angry.
And so when you see this, that it's an adaptive mechanism to the body and not a pathology, it's like, oh my God, how could you lower the body's adaptation to a toxic deficient lifestyle? And now what happens? Okay, think of this. You're lowering the pressure. You're slowing down the pump.
Well, artificially, right?
Artificially.
Not proper.
Exactly. With you know, beta blocker, ACE inhibitor, or worse yet, a diuretic, and the diuretic's going to cause you to lose more fluid. And some of the panels that I was listening to and reading when doing research for this, they're suggesting, well, we don't need to develop new drugs. We just need to use the common diuretics that have been around for years. And I'm going, you guys are whacked.
Yeah.
They don't know.
Yeah.
And so when you look at this, what's going to be the effect of slowing down the function of blood? Because that's what it does. Mm-hmm. You're talking decreased sleep patterns. Because this is what blood pressure medications do. They interrupt sleep.
So they slow down the function of blood? Like they don't pass the nutrients, or the blood doesn't move as quickly?
The blood isn't going to move as quickly.
Okay.
Because you got to figure, if you've got a certain amount of nutrients and oxygen required by the body, and the blood is holding 20% of that. Mm-hmm. Okay, that it should. So the pressure has to increase to compensate for that loss of nutrients and efficiency of the blood.
That's bizarre.
So it's an adaptation. Blood pressure is an adaptation to environmental stimulus.
And it could be an adaptation that only lasts for a day or two or for a few hours, right? I mean,
as long as the person's dehydrated or toxic or stressed.
But what if a person gets their blood pressure taken at a time in their life where they're very stressed, but then a couple of days later that stress lifts, so they think they're always dealing with bad or high blood pressure, aren't they? Because these things are just snapshots in time, really, right?
But you're thinking logical.
Yeah,
I'm trying to get you to think into the medical system, because you're thinking that the body changes daily depending on the stimulus, and it does. That kind of thought pattern doesn't work well in the medical world.
They want to just say that you have high blood pressure, this is you, and then they want us to just throw medications at you.
Well, they first got to scare you.
Yeah.
They're going to say high blood pressure is the leading, is a silent killer.
Uh-huh.
High blood pressure is the leading factor in strokes and kidney disease, and you'll die. It's hereditary. It's, you know, because your father had it, and there's no cure for it. Take this pill, which is completely wrong.
Do they typically, I haven't been to a medical doctor, I don't know how long, but if I were diagnosed with that, would it, do you think a typical medical doctor would give you all those stats and tell you, they would probably tell you all that, wouldn't they?
No, they're going to give you the fear.
Well, no, yeah, that's what I mean. Mm-hmm. Is they'll tell you that X amount of percentage of people will die and that mm-hmm. kind of thing.
And the frustrating part is that's not true. Like, let's just say high blood pressure associated with kidney disease. Uh-huh. Because kidney disease is also, it's listed by some people as a non-communicable disease, and it's listed by the World Health Organization as not. Well, it's not a non-communicable disease yet.
Is there a goal to sort of get a lot of diseases into this category?
It
looks like that's what they're trying to do, right?
Oh, yeah, because that way it's going to be easier to get funding for the pharmaceutical approaches to it, because that's all it is. I mean, they're talking about lifestyle factors as well. They're saying that smoking, okay, is going to be a major factor. They're not saying pollution, but they're saying salt and fast foods and lack of activity.
What do you think about the salt thing?
Oh, the salt thing is ridiculous. Okay, yeah. The American Heart Association recommends, I think it's 1.5 grams per deciliter. And what's frustrating is when you look at the most recent studies, at four times that salt intake, you have less heart disease problems.
Really?
Yeah, but they're not about to change that. I think it was Dr. Topol did a brilliant article on Medscape, T-O-P-O-L.
Yeah.
I mean, brilliant article on it. And he even says in the article, inappropriate levels placed on our population, without basis in science. Like, what's a healthy blood pressure? What's a healthy cholesterol level? Mm-hmm. What's a healthy PSA level?
Mm-hmm.
And these things, they're not based in science. Okay, so when you look at the blood pressure, it goes up and down depending on need or depending on what your system is.
Or cholesterol as well.
Cholesterol, and this is one of the other diseases that's not a disease listed by the NCDs, the non-communicable diseases. You see, what cholesterol is, it's the precursor to every hormone you're going to make, but it's also the building block of cortisol. And cortisol is one of the best anti-inflammatories you make.
Uh-huh.
So imagine this, okay? It feels like Rod Serling.
I know, right?
Imagine
Twilight,
if you will.
Twilight Zone. Cue the music.
If you have a systemic inflammatory response,
okay,
and what that is, that's going to be tissue damage from, say, toxic oils, fried foods, that can do it.
Okay.
If you're smoking, that's going to cause an elevation because that's going to cause damage.
Okay.
If you're living in a polluted environment, like, Beijing is famous for that,
uh-huh,
you're going to have tissue damage that's going to damage the lung surface area. Blood pressure is going to increase because there's more toxins than nutrients in that environment.
Okay.
So these people just living in Beijing are going to have lung issues, blood pressure issues, okay, but also inflammatory issues.
Which cholesterol
is going to be produced in order to adapt to it. Now, let's say you do something completely wacko,
mm-hmm,
like export vaccinations.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Something that our country would never do.
Oh, God.
Something our country would never do.
Okay. Now, what vaccinations do, and this is one of the approaches, because we're not only exporting our toxic food, we're exporting our ignorance in the medical care, but we're also exporting our vaccination schedules. Now, there's only a couple of animal studies I know that have tried the entire course of what we call the childhood vaccines. I mean, we're talking 74 doses of 16 different vaccines injected into an animal species. Now, what this is, in a normal viral, fungal, bacterial, pathogenic response, and this would be that you're breathing it in, you're eating it, you get some kind of a normal response. That's called a Th1 response.
Okay, right.
And this is a brilliant. I mean, it's what Kate's going through now, and I wish she was here to demonstrate.
I know, right? Coughs in the background.
Yeah, because what the cough is, it's indicating that there's going to be some inflammation in the lungs, And inflammation increases immune system response. It's going to increase the heat. Viruses, funguses, and bacteria die at a higher temperature. And her body right now is walling off and building up more mucus and recognizing that virus and building an immune system response, not just antibodies, but an entire immune system response where she's going to build a genetic memory to this that she could pass on to her kids and her relatives. I mean, Okay. Brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
However,
smart, yeah.
If you were to get a vaccine, that's a Th2 response.
So a different, completely different arm of the immune system, right?
Completely different, because what it is instead of breathing or eating a virus, bacteria, or some kind of pathogen, if you inject it into a muscle, that's a Th2 response or an inflammatory response.
Okay.
And this is going to trigger these cells called macrophages. Macro means big, phage means to eat. And these cells go in there and they start chewing up, you know, abnormally placed proteins.
Okay.
And now if you were to just inject, say monkey tissue into your arm or aborted human fetal cells into the arm or, you know, dog kidney tissue or, you know, all the different constituents that are in a vaccine, not much would happen because 50% of your DNA is bacterial. I mean,
Right. You're
used to being stabbed with wood or, you know, cut or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So your body is familiar with that.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to make a vaccine have a huge effect on the immune system, you got to mix adjuvants in there.
Okay.
And the most common one is, you know, that gets the news is thimerosal or mercury.
So are the adjuvants the things within the vaccines that are the most harmful?
Well, let's just say it's the most immune system stimulatory.
Okay.
Okay. I was reading an article on, now this is going to sound weird because you can't talk about vaccines in the scientific literature. Okay. You kind of get that red flagged and pulled.
Yeah.
But you can talk about the adjuvants.
Okay.
Okay. So there's, a human one called ASIR or adjuvant induced inflammatory response. So they're talking about because this now the science can only talk about the adjuvants or the other ingredients in the vaccine other than the virus or infected tissue.
Okay.
Now, those adjuvants, the aluminum one is probably the most prominent and the most toxic.
Yeah.
And because it's in every vaccine. And they even use the aluminum adjuvants in vaccine studies as the placebo.
Really?
I know this is going to sound weird.
That's bizarre.
Well, you might be misinformed because you might think the way I used to think that,
I know, right?
that a placebo was an innocuous substance that you had something to compare to.
Yeah.
Why the heck would you mix a neurotoxin in a placebo?
Why are they putting the metals in these things? Do we know what is the purpose of the metals? Do they supposedly carry something through? What's the deal with that?
No, this is the neat part. Because, I mean, if you don't look down the line and you're not looking at the entire immune system response or with the rest of the body, if your entire world is based on antibody production.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Then you're not going to care about brain, spleen, liver, long-term effects of a vaccine.
Okay.
So, you know, you can't think long-term when you're thinking vaccines.
Okay.
Okay. So you inject this in the muscle and you have to have aluminum in there in order for the body to mount an antibody response.
Okay.
So, and this is the only thing that they measure to see if that vaccine is working in the body.
They measure your antibody response.
Your antibody response.
Okay.
And then they say, good, you have lots of antibodies, you're protected. And the theory goes, if you have a little antibodies, you're not protected. In actual fact, the antibodies don't denote protection. There's actually, a genetic anomaly or abnormality called agamma globulinemia. And these are people that don't have the ability to produce antibodies.
Really?
And when they get infected, they recover just with the exact same sequelae that you would have if you had antibodies. So
Wow. The
entire science of antibodies protecting you or antibodies not being there, not protecting you is completely false.
Are antibodies the same? Or is that the same as white blood cells?
Kind of. White blood cells have a bunch of different effects on it. I mean, there's eosinophils, basophils. There's a bunch of little cells that have specific purpose.
Okay.
And so the white cells are more like the immune system responder cells.
Okay.
But I got to tell you, okay, remember ASIR, you know, the adjuvant induced in humans? I was reading this thing on sheep adjuvant syndrome.
Ooh, that doesn't sound good.
No. But it was a brilliant article. Okay, on they had this group of sheep with blue tongue, and one of my patients is a shepherd, so I actually had a chance to talk to him about it.
Really?
And yeah, he has a bumper sticker that says the world's second oldest profession.
Right? That's awesome.
Okay, so the sheep adjuvant syndrome. They did a study where they're vaccinating these sheep. And they're finding out, oh my God, that the TH2 response that you're getting stimulates the macrophage activity. So the macrophage is these big eater cells are going to chew up the abnormally placed proteins. They're going to chew up the constituents of the vaccines. They're also going to chew up the aluminum. And what they do is, it's the same response like if you were to get a bruise. Why does the bruise go away? It goes away because you have a closed system, and a bruise is broken blood vessels. Uh-huh. So these macrophages start to chew that up. It puts everything that they chew up into the lymph system. Well, what they found with this adjuvant system, or the sheep adjuvant syndrome, is that the macrophages would chew up the aluminum as well as all the other constituents of the vaccine. They would dump it into the lymph system. The lymph system would pass it off to the venous system. Then that would go to the heart, to the lungs, back to the heart, and throughout the entire system, and is able to cross the blood-brain barrier.
Really?
So they actually found aluminum deposits in the brain and spleen up to a year after the vaccinations. Now, aluminum deposits in the brain and spleen, it's incredibly neurotoxic. I mean, you've got some beyond ignorant, criminally ignorant doctors saying that aluminum is the most abundant thing in the world, and, you know, it is, okay, and that it's around the body a lot, and it is, but it doesn't get in the bloodstream unless you're injecting it through a vaccine. So when I say criminally ignorant, is because they're not looking at one of the main causes of systemic inflammatory responses.
Wow. That's
so when you look at systemic inflammatory responses, and if you actually were able to dissect the brains or the spleens of animals going through neurologic problems, such as what we would call autism, anxiety, depression, all these different,
like ALS or Alzheimer's,
buddy. Like you're talking exactly. Yeah. Parkinson's, okay, typically has trauma, but again, these are all neurogenic diseases. What about dementia? Mm-hmm. Dementia costs in this country are four times what cancers are. So why is that? Why is dementia so prevalent? And, you know, some, again, well-meaning but ignorant doctors are saying, well, we're living longer. No, that's not true.
My doctor told me the same thing.
Yeah.
I asked him about cancer and why people are being diagnosed with cancer a lot more, and he was saying the exact same thing.
Yeah. And it's completely wrong. If you factor out infant mortality, we're living, human lifespan hasn't typically changed in over 2,000 years.
Uh-huh.
So that's not actually true. The frustrating thing is the generation underneath us is going to die at a greater rate than we are.
Well, they're saying too that the generation that's here now is going to be living a lot less in terms of duration of their total life. So it's
So we're doing something wrong.
Yeah. I wonder why. I think there's going to be more and more people diagnosed and this generation of people having to deal with heavy metal issues later on in life, and Alzheimer's and dementia and these things, because the heavy metals seem to be in our environment a lot more. This generation, I mean, think about all the kids that are vaccinated now in the early 90s and beyond up until now. They're probably loaded with these mercury and heavy metals that eventually, if they're not damaged now, at one point it's going to get into their brain when they're 70, 80 years old.
It does have a cumulative effect. I mean, we've never seen a population that's had a vaccine every year for, from 6 months old to when you're 80.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and now they've got the new adult vaccine schedule, which is going to be 13 different vaccines. And now they're passing laws because some people are actually educated and look into the data and research, and they're saying, no, it's not a good idea. But so they're passing laws that take the choice away from you. So in California, we have the SB 277.
Well, that was just, that just got passed, right?
Yeah, it's going up before the state Senate, maybe shot down. But it's amazing because not only have they taken your right away to choose, but they're forcing a medical procedure on you. And this medical procedure is not studied. And they'll say, oh, no, it's science. It's based in science. But that's not true. When you ask, has there ever been an animal study, okay, that shows all the vaccines given in an appropriate quantity in the same time frame as the humans? I know of only one. And
really?
It was done in 2008 at the University of Pittsburgh by a Dr. Laura Hewitson. And she took a group of monkeys and gave them, you know, at 12 hours old, they gave them a hepatitis B, and then they gave them, you know, at the appropriate time, you know, 1 month, 6 months, 18 months, you know, the DPT, MMR, you know, the whole 74 doses of 16 different vaccines.
Gosh.
And what was amazing is 100% of the monkeys. And she didn't say that she was doing it to, study vaccines. Her cover was they were going to dissect the monkeys afterwards and study the amygdala to see if it changed an area of the brain called the amygdala.
Okay.
Yeah. Well,
nice cover.
Oh, it didn't work. Her findings got published in the Journal of Neurology, and it was pulled after about a month because this is incredibly damning. I mean, you can't blame actually put under the light of scientific scrutiny a medical procedure that's dogmatic. I mean, this is a religion. It's not science.
Yeah, it's definitely a religion.
I mean, you know, is vitamin C going to affect everybody the exact same way? No. Is an aspirin going to affect everybody the same way? No. Vaccines, it's one size fits all. Now, this monkey study in 2008, you're talking 100% of them develop bowel gastrointestinal problems.
100%.
Most of them couldn't eat regular monkey food. They all developed antisocial behavior, all 100%. And they also had a control group. This is something we've never done, where you take a non-active placebo. Uh-huh. And I know you're thinking, well, what the heck is an active placebo? That's the placebo with the aluminum in it.
I know, right? That's
right.
Yeah, exactly. So what the heck is
that? It's like, wait a second, the stuff we were raised with, that placebos are innocuous substances, it's wrong.
You know,
it's like gravity doesn't exist anymore.
Alternate reality. Wow.
Yeah, but so that's, and what one of my other patients, he was actually one of the persons that procured the vaccines, because it's hard to get the different vaccines for a study on animals, because if you start getting them and, you know, you're working with animals instead of kids.
I just don't know what the vaccine thing is really interesting. Kate and I were talking about this the other day. It's bizarre to me that, you know how, a lot of times you might give someone a drink, like what Kate just brought us, green juices, but if you were walking down the street and you saw someone, maybe a homeless person or something, and they offered you their drink, you would think, oh, I don't know, I'm not sure, what did he spit in this, or what's, you know what I mean? You wouldn't know what, especially if it's half full and you're just not sure, right? But it's funny because in that case scenario, you could talk to that person and say, ask them any question you want. What is it? Is it coffee? Is it this? Is it Coke, water, whatever? But with vaccines, you don't know. The doctor doesn't know what's really in the vaccines. And then the person who they get it from is some pharmaceutical company. So you're three or four levels removed from the actual people who know what's in these things. So, and with a drink that you were to drink off the street from someone, at least it's going through your protective digestive system, right? To filter anything out.
I love the analogy.
But it's like you would never, you would still, in that case scenario, you wouldn't drink that drink. You'd be suspect of drinking it. But with a vaccine, you're four or five levels removed, especially with bureaucracies and institutions that you may or may not be reputable and sort of, you know, with your highest values. And so you don't know the politics that go around these things. So the act of getting a vaccine is so bizarre because you don't know. It would never happen in a real world situation that where you would meet someone. Because you'd be so suspect, especially a stranger.
And there's total misinformation out there.
Yeah.
And on the way down, I was listening to NPR, and they were National Public Radio, and they were saying that there was an Andrew Wakefield seminar, and, you know, they mentioned how he's a discredited MD that, you know, correlated the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine with autism. He really didn't. He correlated it with a gastrointestinal problem and thought that that may lead to the, you know, brain anomalies that we're seeing. But they had a couple of interviews on there, and one of the girls that was at the seminar said, well, you know, vaccines are literally poison. And of course, the radio announcer says, silly, vaccines aren't poison.
Really?
Well, I got to tell you, they're not poison. Okay. And it's kind of like saying, smoking does not cause cancer. Because there's a lot of people out there that smoke that don't get cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And inside of the vaccine, it's not poison, but there are neoplastic cells that are growing in it. And neoplastic cells are oncogenic or cancer cells. Mm-hmm. So you're injecting cancer cells in there. You're injecting neurotoxins. Now, it depends on your definition of a poison. This thing is poisonous to nerve. It's a toxin. Mm-hmm. Okay. But is it considered a poison? So, you know, we need to get educated on exactly what you're talking about, the ingredients of them.
Yeah.
If you knew that the measles, mumps, and rubella, the measles portion in itself is grown in, oncogenic cells or cancer cells. The flu shot is now grown in four different growth mediums. It's still grown in the chicken eggs. It's also grown in dog kidneys, monkey kidneys, aborted human fetal cells, and caterpillar larvae. So if you are going to get a flu shot because, you know, let's just say, you know, you need it for work or you haven't a freaking clue about anatomy and physiology. Okay. And you're just going to go get it. Ask them, what's it grown in? What are the ingredients? Okay.
Do you think most doctors would know that?
Oh, no, the doctors won't, but there has to be a sheet that comes with it. And so it'll say, you know, that MK8, you know, a group of fetal cells, or it'll say that the renal cells, okay, or say bovine growth or bovine serum. Wow. So it'll say the constituents that this is grown in. So you can't isolate a virus. Viruses are not alive. So what people forget is that viruses are a well-organized molecular parasite. Mm-hmm. So they only grow in other tissue. So a vaccine has infected tissue in it. And the most efficient tissue to grow is immortal tissue. And immortal cells are called neoplastic cells. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at, I mean, if you're just sitting around, you know, wanting to have fun, type in neoplastic cell growth medium and the FDA.gov site comes up, and that's the constituents or the growth medium for most vaccines.
Neoplastic
cell growth medium.
Cell growth medium.
Yeah. Wow. And what's a trip is they found it back in, I think it was 1954, but they decided not to use it back then.
Okay. 54.
Yeah. Well, because now listen to this bizarre thought. They thought that if you're injecting cancer cells in a person, that it might cause cancer.
Cancer. Shocking, right? Maybe there's a connection.
Maybe there's a connection.
Wow. Well, our brains were working too well in 1954. All those minerals, I think our brains were firing off better.
The soil was better. Yeah. Okay, you're right. Well, now the powers that be are doing post-marketing surveillance to protect us.
What's that mean?
That means we're shooting the people, and then we're going to look down years to see if we've actually caused cancer.
Wow.
Okay. Now, I mean, you figure the shot that I got, okay, when I was a kid, I'm 55, mm-hmm. okay? And when I got the polio shot way back when in the 60s, and I think it was a polio sugar cube, actually, that had SV40 virus in it, or the simian virus. That wasn't discovered until like the late 80s, early 90s, that this is associated with I mean, half the non-Hodgkin's lymphoma cancers, it's associated with multiple glioblastomas, I mean, brain tumors, lymphomas. And this was the shot that was given, you know, 40, 50 years ago.
What was it called?
The SV40 virus. S stands for simian. V is the virus, and 40 is the 40th virus they found.
Okay.
So you might be saying, well, what happened to the first 39?
Yeah. Why did it take 40?
I thought you'd be asking about that.
Yeah.
Because remember, these are grown in living cells, in living growth medium. So there's a lot of wild viruses that you can't separate.
Uh-huh.
And so they just happen to find out that this simian virus or monkey virus happens to be in certain tumors. And the only way a monkey virus can get into those type of tumors is through the injection. So, I mean, it took 40 years to find that the monkey virus that was passed out to all those kids was in there and waiting. So, I mean.
So this was the SV40
virus from the polio shot.
From the polio shot. Okay.
Yeah. Now, also too, we're training people. See, if I was to get the same number of vaccines that a child gets today, you know, the 74 shots of 16 different viruses, each one of those triggering a Th2 response, each one triggering an inflammatory response, each one triggering macrophage, breaking down those nutrients, getting those metals, the aluminums, the foreign proteins, the mercury, that the animal constituents, the kidney cells, the dog kidney cells, massive rise in when they changed the manufacturing from the MMR, to making the MMR in aborted human fetal cells, huge rise in autism.
Why is that?
We don't know, and it's not going to be studied, so don't worry about it.
Okay, just case closed. Don't worry about it. Nothing to see here. Keep it moving.
I know. It's total Naked Gun stuff.
Wow.
but when you look at it, you can guess, okay, that autism, since it has gut issues,
uh-huh.
And when you're looking at an inflammatory issue in the brain, and the Th2 is an inflammatory response, and it does say encephalitis, which is an inflammation of the coverings around the brain.
Okay.
And there's multiple things on the shots, the side effects, which really should be called effects, that show that it causes inflammation.
Okay.
Now, let's just say for the heck of it that we're exporting these vaccines to third world or developing nations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're teaching the body to respond to the environment by an inflammatory response.
Okay.
Now, what's the greatest anti-inflammatory that the body makes? Cortisol.
Uh-huh.
So does that mean that with all of these shots, we're actually causing the body to elevate its cholesterol levels? Ah,
okay.
And in fact, one of my patients, he only works on neurologic damage kids. This guy is the most brilliant pediatrician I've ever talked to.
Really?
He actually gives cholesterol supplements to the autistic kids. Cholesterol supplements.
Wow.
Now, why would that be? So when you start thinking of it, what's the function of cholesterol? And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, cholesterol bad. There's good cholesterol. There's bad cholesterol. No, none of that's true.
Yeah.
Okay. Cholesterol is the precursor to every hormone you're going to make. It's the precursor to cortisol, which is the best anti-inflammatory. It's the main constituent of your brain.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
Cell membranes, right? Isn't that cholesterol, fat?
All around every cell membrane.
Yeah.
It's the most brilliant complex molecule your body makes.
Speaking of, I have a question here from a listener. By the way, before I get to this, I took this picture at RCS just up the street here. One in six will get the flu. This is on our Instagram. 1 in 6 will get the flu. Don't risk it. No cost flu shots with most insurance. High dose shots available. Check high dose shots available for 65 plus. Get a 20. This one's great. Get a 20% off for shopping pass when you get a flu shot.
Oh.
And they make it no appointment necessary.
Oh, I know the high dose flu shots. You know what? Those were never tested.
They were never tested.
Never tested on humans. And,
wow.
And well, unless you call, you know, what they're doing now a test.
So we got a listener question here that actually goes right along with what you were talking about just now with cholesterol. And I know I think you have a lot of good videos on your YouTube channel, mm-hmm. talks on this, right?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Jennifer from Georgia, I have a question for Dr. Bergman. I have had a heart attack, and my cardiologist has had me on the statin Zocor for a long time. As my cholesterol is high, and he says he didn't want me to have another heart attack. I recently took myself off of them, as I've been hearing bad things about them. So my question is, what should I do in place of them?
Ah, good. Okay, realize that cholesterol is produced because there's tissue damage or an inflammatory response somewhere. Heart attacks don't come from clogged arteries, at least 80% of the time. So you've got about an 80% chance that your heart attack came from a neurogenic cause or a problem with the nervous system.
Okay.
So you've got to look at, there's two halves of the autonomic nervous system or autonomics, parasympathetic and sympathetic. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing now is the recent cause or the actual cause of heart attacks is not clogged arteries. That's a theory that was disproven back in the 70s, that it's actually from a low functioning parasympathetic nervous system. Really? And which is tough, because if you say that, how many hospitals have cardiac wards? How many hospitals do bypass surgeries or stents? This is a massive infrastructure built on the theory that arteries clog. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you don't need to worry about reducing the cholesterol. What you do need to do is find the neurogenic cause of it. So you're going to need to get your nervous system checked by a corrective chiropractor. Hopefully you're going to be able to get what's called a heart rate variability scan.
You guys do that, right?
Oh, yeah, we do that. And what's neat is, like, you know, in the movies when you see that, like, someone's hooked up to a heart machine and you see this little, like, blip thing, uh-huh, and then blip. What that is, that's a QRS interval of the heart. And that little blip thing where it goes up and down like a little Zorro thingy.
Uh-huh.
Well, what you do is we measure that over the period of 5 minutes.
Okay.
And then we can tell, because we're measuring the height of it, the strength of it, the distance between each variations of that QRS interval. And we find out if you're sympathetic dominant or parasympathetic dominant and the strength of your systems. And okay, then you're also going to need to get an x-ray of your neck and sacrum area, because if your head is forward, that's literally going to pull the spinal cord, pulling the brainstem, and can alter the brainstem function, because the heart has a couple of different nerve supplies. One, it has sensors inside of the neck from cranial nerve 9 and 10, and it also has a sympathetic or fight or flight response from the upper rib cage area.
Okay.
So you got to look at the upper rib cage area or upper thoracic area and also upper cervical area. But look at for a neurogenic cause, okay, not clogged arteries.
Okay.
And look for a systemic inflammatory response requiring your body to have it. So you're talking vegetable juices to not just clean the arteries, but heal the arteries because they have soluble fiber. Uh-huh. You're talking huge amounts of vitamin C, spicy foods if you can get it. But look at heart attacks is not a problem of the heart, not a problem of the arteries. Look at it as a systemic problem. Mm-hmm. You got to get the whole body healthy.
Stress would be a thing, something to look at.
You need stress to live, but how you handle the stress is completely different. Mm-hmm. It's almost like the ancient torture. It was called the death of a thousand cuts.
Right.
And I mean, you could heal from one cut, you can heal from two, you could heal from 100.
Uh-huh.
But eventually, you pass the body's ability to deal with that type of stress, and eventually the stress will kill you.
Okay.
And there's three stressors. I'm glad you brought that up, because there's physical, chemical, and emotional stress. Your body responds the same way to all three.
Physical, chemical, and emotional.
And emotional.
Okay.
So if you're stressed and frustrated and angry because you were cut off in traffic or you're not happy, mm-hmm, that's the same as eating, you know, McDonald's every day. Okay. And it's the same as getting into a traffic accident. Okay.
Or so some people eat that kind of food while they're stressed.
Oh, good God.
Most people, right?
And then they feel guilty about it. So then you get all three.
You get all three of them. Man. So the body's actually responding to these things in the same way. Because anything, mm-hmm, that we put food, all food is a stress, right? Isn't, mm-hmm, it? At some point, your body has to sort of figure out what it is and how to deal with it.
Wait a second. Let's think about this a second. So you're right. So now if you're dealing with stress, are you going to, is your body going to intelligently respond by producing stress hormones such as adrenaline, noradrenaline, epinephrine, norepinephrine? Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Now, how does the body make those stress hormones? What's the precursor? What's the building block? Oh, it's cholesterol.
Yeah, cholesterol, right?
Oh, so the body is building cholesterol in order to help you to adapt to the toxin deficient circumstance that your body's going. The heart attack is an expression of the inability to adapt to those stressors. So the stress on the nervous system in the neck or in the upper back, or the stress of lack of hormone production or something. It's a physical, chemical, or emotional stress load. What I'm suggesting is you got to check the nervous system first, ideally, primarily.
You know what's wild about that is that with that type of thing, it's easy for people to say, especially doctors. I mean, I understand why the system is the way it is, because people don't necessarily really want to look at their health issue, their health challenge, whatever it is, as being something that's a full holistic lifestyle thing that they have to change. It's easy. If I were a doctor and I believed in the system, I'd give Zocor as well. I would think it's going to get rid of your symptoms and you know, people will feel better. But it takes someone who really wants to say, hey, I've got to change my stress levels. And maybe for some people that means changing their job. That's a big deal, right? That's huge.
I've got several doctors as patients, medical doctors, uh-huh. and it's so fun because we've had this conversation before, and I'll say, hey doc, you know type 2 diabetes is correctable, okay? You just have to change it.
You know this, right?
Yeah. But you have to say two things when you're dealing with a doctor that really doesn't know. You have to say, as you know.
Yeah, that's right.
And obviously.
Yeah.
Okay, so this way, because they really don't. I mean, if they knew anything about nutrition, they wouldn't be doing this stuff.
Right.
So that's funny. So they'd express their frustration that they'd say, lifestyle changes is going to change diabetes, but in the meantime, take this metformin or glucophage.
Yeah.
Doc, as you know, that metformin or glucophage lowers the blood sugar, but insulin levels remain high. Uh-huh. And the more you lower the blood sugar with that high insulin levels, they die of cardiovascular disease earlier. Mm-hmm. So you have an increase in death rate by giving the drug. Mm-hmm. It doesn't help the patient. It just reduces the blood sugar. So obviously.
obviously, right? As you know.
And I told him the better way to communicate, okay, to a patient is you don't give them a choice. You say, look, your blood sugar is elevated. This means the blood is thick. This means it's going to tax the kidneys, which is your blood filter. Eventually, you're going to go impotent. Eventually, your legs are going to be amputated. Now, we can solve this in about 30 to 60 days. Mm-hmm. Okay? If you take a drug, you're going to die early. Mm-hmm. Now, there's no choice. I'm telling you, this is the pathway you're on. Mm-hmm. You just do some lifestyle changes, you're going to get better. Mm-hmm. And what's neat is you check your blood sugar every day by pricking your finger. Mm-hmm. You're going to see it normalized in a couple of weeks. And to actually change your physiology takes between 30 and 60 days.
Yeah, that's amazing because, what's really going on? It's funny because when you look at disease and you look at these types of things, I mean, all we're really doing is we're looking at levels that we've predetermined should be at a certain range or not. But the actual disease process, it almost seems like the disease itself is some sort of invisible, hidden process that's happening. And the only way we can sort of get a glimpse into that process is that people that die of heart attacks also have cholesterol, so cholesterol must be bad. Mm-hmm. But it's this invisible process that's happening. Maybe it's their subconscious mind or the stress of their life or how they're living, but that's the real place to go for dealing with these things, and people don't want to address that, it seems like.
Well, on the way here, I saw a dead cat on the side of the road, and there were flies all around it. You have some aggressive flies. The flies must have killed a cat.
I know, right? Obviously, as you know.
And that's the problem, because you got to figure, in a stroke, uh-huh. that means that the brain isn't healthy, or the blood vessels inside of the brain aren't healthy.
Uh-huh.
In kidney damage, okay, the kidneys are a blood or the size of your fist, and they filter 6 quarts of blood every 20 minutes. They're highly vascularized.
Uh-huh.
So if you have any problem with blood vessels, like, say, nutrient deficiencies, like vitamin C, those blood vessels are going to weak, they're going to get clot, they're going to get damaged, okay? In order to compensate for that loss of surface area, mm-hmm. okay, in the kidneys, blood pressure has to increase to adapt to get the same amount of blood through less surface area.
Okay.
If you have clogged arteries or damaged stuff inside of the brain, okay, because it's usually going to be from some type of an inflammatory response, mm-hmm. and the body's going to have to increase pressure in order to keep oxygen flowing to areas of the brain. So high blood pressure does not cause strokes. High blood pressure is an adaptation to a toxic deficient lifestyle
right.
that caused the stroke. High blood pressure does not cause kidney disease. The kidney disease, having less surface area, the blood pressure is going to increase in order to adapt to the damaged kidneys.
Interesting. So it's your body's real way of adapting, like you just said, to a toxic lifestyle. It's your body saying, hey, in order to transport this oxygen to the brain, to the blood cells, I have to increase the pressure because whatever else is causing this damage, I need to increase the pressure to do my function.
And that's the most of the non-communicable diseases. They're called diseases. They're not diseases. They're the body. It's adaptive physiology to a toxic deficient lifestyle.
So with non-communicable diseases, so like you said earlier, they are trying to sort of classify more and more diseases as non-communicable because they have some sort of financial gain with the pharmaceuticals and things?
Huge.
They could throw more drugs and things.
Oh, by gosh, you have never hit the head of that nail harder.
Okay, so it's obviously a financial.
With everything. Financial and dogmatic approach. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, there's some people out there that are doing this, obviously for financial gain, but also altruistically. I mean, if you care about people and love people, but you're completely ignorant about physiology and you think that blood pressure, high blood pressure and type 2 diabetes and high cholesterol are diseases, you're going to try and treat those with chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you're aware that there's a toxic deficient lifestyle that needs to be corrected in order to change this, you're not going to be treating it with chemicals.
Do you foresee a time where this is ever going to change, do you think?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you think it's going to change?
It absolutely guaranteed. This is the Renaissance.
People are waking up in mass right now, too.
Oh, and that's why the government is scared and passing these laws to force medical procedures on us. They're saying, oh, no. It's just that weird psycho fringe that thinks that vegetable juicing is good for you, you know?
Right.
Take your aspirin a day.
Yeah.
And it's not. People are being educated. They're looking at their parents who the average person over 60 has taken 12 prescriptions and by gosh, they're not healthy.
12 prescriptions over 60?
The average. Now, you don't know what one drug does, let alone three, let alone 12. Nobody knows.
And how they interact with each other.
Oh, goodness gracious, nobody knows. And then you're talking, looking at the assisted living center. I did a couple of health talks, okay, at some high schools. And I started doing those health talks at high schools years ago. I asked a third of my practice is under 12. So I'm asking my kid patients, what should I talk about? Do you know what the kids today wanted to hear?
In high school,
they wanted to know about heart disease, cancer, and diabetes.
Are you serious?
And I'm going, wait a second. When I was in high school, there's no way.
Nah.
What's their lives being affected with?
Their parents.
Their parents and grandparents and uncles, and they're all dying of heart disease, cancer, and diabetes.
Those three issues probably account for 99% of death.
No, it's actually 63%.
Oh, really? Is that right?
Honest to goodness.
Cancer, what is it? Cancer, diabetes?
Cancer, diabetes, heart disease, and the other non-communicable diseases. We haven't even talked about anxiety and depression, which is also a non-communicable disease.
Is that what they're saying?
They're saying that anxiety, depression, and attention deficit disorder, those are also non-communicable diseases. diseases. Now, why would the brain start to malfunction when we know that these diseases are nutrition or gut oriented or diet? Where's 80% of the body's serotonin produced? In the gut. Mm-hmm. So when you look at depression and anxiety, bipolar disorder, those type of things, they're from some type of toxic effect generally in the gut.
In the gut.
And it's just my, it's so simple to solve, but it has to be done through the grassroots. We're the only ones that are going to do it. So we're on the Renaissance, baby.
Yeah. Depression and anxiety. Didn't they say recently that wasn't there a guy that said, I forget who it was, but an article came out. I saw it on the internet. You know, I mean, the internet's just so much stuff coming in, but there's someone who did the original research on ADHD or ADD or something. And before he died, he said something about how these diseases, the whole thing was a fabricated scam. There was no real ADHD and this type of stuff. All the numbers were skewed and elevated to make it look like this was this big issue. Mm-hmm. But it's just crazy because so many people, especially kids, are diagnosed with these things.
All the time.
And then later on in life, depression and anxiety. I mean, anxiety is a huge thing. Huge.
And we get at least a vaccine damage kit a week. Okay. And we get kids with, the ADD, ADHD diagnosis or label all the time. I had this one, so darling, kid that came out from Texas with, she was labeled with OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder.
Okay.
I said, hun, you don't have that. And somebody with attention deficit disorder doesn't have that either.
Okay.
Okay, because they can focus on what they want to focus on. Okay.
Exactly.
It's just they have something going on. And what we've found 100% of the time so far, maybe there's a kid out there that doesn't, but there's some type of stressors on the kid, either physical, chemical, or emotional stress.
Uh-huh.
And they're putting that kid in a fight or flight state. We usually see that there's going to be a traumatic birth. There's going to be a history of ear infections, a history of skin disorders or digestive disorders or breathing problems. The mom typically was given Pitocin or an epidural during the birth process.
Uh-huh.
And that caused physical and chemical changes in the kid. Yeah, we typically, and this is going to sound weird, to get the average ADD, ADH kid better, usually takes about 2 weeks to a month.
Really?
Because you got to change their perception of what their body is. When we go in there and I show exact evidence on an x-ray of birth trauma, and I say, look, buddy, you know, you're just stuck in a fight or flight state. I mean, you know, you'd be great on the paintball field, but it's hard for your brain to calm down in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we're going to take the pressure off of this area here, and you're going to be able to function in the classroom.
So do you mind if I ask you, I got a bunch of questions about prenatal chiropractic and the type of chiropractic you do.
Yeah.
So in your office, you have a thing that says, in the back, it says, adjusted since birth, healthy for life or lifetime. And I've seen you with little kids, babies even. And I'm always curious how you go about adjusting them, why they need to be adjusted. Or is it something that most kids may, if they're born naturally, they're okay, but could benefit from that? What's going on when you're holding that little baby? I see you do it all the time.
All the time.
It's amazing.
We're checking the nervous system. Now, you don't have conscious control of the muscles that run down either side of the spine. So when we say we're checking the nervous system, I'm actually checking for an increased tone, change in tone or of the muscles, or an increase in heat or an asymmetrical heat signature.
So you're feeling?
Just feeling going right along.
Down the spine.
And what's amazing is when you get a normal child, it's so freaky weird.
Is it?
Yeah, because they're normal and they function good.
Yeah, normal kids aren't coming to you.
Yeah, yeah. No, normal kids are going to be like a home birth, a water birth, you know, the mom's been taken care of. But you get the average child who the mom had, you know, the flu shot, and then she was given Pitocin, and then the baby monitor, and then the kid's given, you know, the 12-hour hepatitis B shot, and, you know, the vitamin K shot, and the silver nitrate in the eyes, and the entire traumatic stuff that the kid goes through.
Yeah.
Those kids are going to have bowel and bladder disorders. And when we're checking them, at the bottom of the spine, right above the butt, there's an area called the sacrum. And I'll show the parents, and it's called the sacrum pump. And I'll actually grab the parent's hand and show how to give this pump mechanism on a child. And it's so cool because when you're doing this, you'll feel the kid fart or poop right in your hand.
Wow.
And since typically these kids are, their digestive tract is horrible. Because if they were like a C-section birth, which is about half of the kids today, they're going to have major bowel issues. Okay. They're going to have major trauma. A C-section has four times the amount of pressure on a child's neck than a natural, than a normal vaginal birth.
Really?
Oh,
even
my.
If they pull the baby out with forceps or the hands?
Forceps birth. There's a lot of challenges with vaginal birth if it's done in a hospital.
Okay.
If it's done at home, you're talking 18 per thousand births in a hospital have a trauma. Okay. At home, I think it's 0.025. Because when you're, the kid's got to come through this, the cervix has got to dilate. Okay. And it's only going to dilate in a rested environment. And it, the mom is, if you've ever seen a natural birth, the mom's moving all over the place. It's almost like a dance between the baby and the mom. And in the hospital, heck no. You know, you got white lights, you got a needle stuck in your arm, you got a baby monitor.
Cold room.
A cold room. They're not wanting you to walk around. And so it's a challenge for the kid to come out.
And the kid doesn't want to. And when you, as far as I know from the Pitocin, it blocks off the ability for the child to communicate with the mother, right? So the kids, so the kid wants to come out and the kid wants to do this dance with the mother and work in harmony with her so that it can be birthed. But Pitocin, from what I understand, it blocks that connection. So the mother has to do all the work and it takes away pain, I guess, but
The Pitocin is it's a cow hormone that initiates uterine contractions. So the mom's in a stress state. She's not going to want to have that uterus contract to get the kid out because she's thinking this is a dangerous environment. Okay. So you override that normal uterine contractions with its Pitocin. And so then you got this kid's head slamming up against the cervix. Okay. That's not appropriately dilated and the kid's not in the right position. So then the cervix swells up. And then the kid's head or neck gets traumatized from that impact. And so then there's a lot of pain. There's so much pain. Then they give the epidural. Then the mom is totally, you know, not able to push, to feel. And all of this is why Pitocin increases the risk of neurologic damage from the vaccines 60%. And so you start looking at this and go, oh my gosh. So when I'm doing the exam on these kids, I'll say, was the kid born natural at home or in a hospital? No, natural in a hospital. I said, hon, that is impossible.
Yeah. That's almost like an oxymoron.
Yeah, fresh frozen.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, she's just a little bit pregnant.
Yeah, she's only a little pregnant. So they'll say that.
Okay, they'll say that all the time. And then I go through, you know, were you given Pitocin? Yes, I was. Were you given the epidural? Okay, good.
Yeah.
Was he given the vitamin K shot? Was he given the hepatitis B? Was he given the silver nitrate in his eyes?
Is the vitamin K shot, that's not what they put in the eyes, is it?
No, the silver nitrate in the eyes. And this is so antiquated. I mean, it burns the kids' eyes. It's to prevent gonorrhea. And you can already see if the mom's got, you would know that. And they're doing sometimes they're switching to antibiotics in the eyes. But really the kid needs that normal flora. This is his first response. Now some doctors are starting to get a bit smarter. On C-section babies, they're actually swabbing the vaginal canal to get all the healthy bacteria out of the vaginal canal. And they're rubbing the vaginal secretions all over the C-section kid's body.
Okay. Wow.
The child's got to know what bacteria to fight and what bacteria to not fight. Since 50% of your DNA is bacteria. When the child is laid on the mom's stomach, okay, after birth, the child recognizes all the bacteria on the mom and the bacteria is transferred. So the child knows, okay, this is Staph epididymis. I'm not going to fight this. This is a cool bacteria.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, and so they recognize the normal flora for that environment.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then it's teaching and educating the immune system right from the beginning. What's foreign? What's domestic? What do I need to fight? What works well with my system? What's harmful? What's not? Right.
Ooh, I liked what you just said. Teaching and educating the immune system. So imagine 12 hours into birth, you educate that immune system with hepatitis B in a TH2 response or an inflammatory response. Ooh. That's a bad education. That's like trying to teach someone with a belt.
Yeah, that's a bad education. That's not. So now when you have kids coming in, is a lot of the traumas they're having, at least in their upper cervical, a result of either the C-sections or the forceps in the hospital or some sort of damage that's being caused at the time of birth? And that's what you're sort of correcting when you're... Because you're not doing adjustments on little tiny babies.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But what's neat is it requires so little pressure. A lot of times I'll even hold the mom's hand or the dad's hand and I'll say, feel this on one side, feel this over here. And I'll use the mom's hand and it's just a little vibration, a little bit of pressure. And you'll just feel that increased tone decrease right away. And you'll see the kid all of a sudden relax. Doing the sacral pump is amazing. You know, just teaching the parents how to take care of the kid.
Wow.
It's like turning the kids, as long as the neck is supported, if you can rock that kid to where the butt is higher than the head.
I've seen you do that.
It's phenomenal stimulation for the kid's central nervous system.
Uh-huh.
It actually is great. Like if you're with a screaming baby inside of an airplane and the kid's screaming because they're frustrated, they're uncomfortable, not because of an ear problem. Mm-hmm. In most ear infections are not infections in kid. There's ear effusions. And that comes from a dysfunction or a trauma to the upper neck area. And that controls what's called the soft palate. And the middle ear actually drains through a tube that goes through the soft palate called the eustachian tube.
Okay.
So most ear infections in kids are from birth trauma. Okay, at least 93% of
them. That's why they put the tubes in their ears and all that?
Oh, good God.
Is that what that is?
Yeah, that's crazy.
I had that. What is that?
It's just nuts because you have a natural tube. That means that to get that tube in, it means that there's an upper cervical issue. It means that the soft palate isn't functioning correctly because every time you swallow, that eustachian tube opens. That's why when you swallow, you can hear your ears crack.
Yeah, that happens a lot to me.
You're opening and closing that eustachian tube. So you're hearing it crack.
So that should not be happening.
Well, you should hear the crack, but if you have an ear infection or effusion, you're not going to hear it. Okay. It just means that the soft palate's not working and the middle ear fills up with fluid. That's another reason that the moms will bring in the kids because the kid will be tugging on his ear. And I think it's 83% of children are fixed within the first adjustment because we just take pressure off the upper neck. The soft palate works better. The ears drain naturally.
So if that were to happen, or when that does happen, does the initial adjustment hold and how long does that hold for kids?
It depends on kids are just like adults, the physical, chemical and emotional traumas that they're under.
Okay.
If the mom was given Pitocin and epidural, the vitamin K, the B12, I mean, every shot and drug that the kid's been given, we've had 4 months old kids in there on antacids.
Oh my God.
Because they're spitting up breast milk. I mean, it's, you wouldn't even believe it.
That's bizarre.
It is bizarre.
Wow.
And so, we come in. We get the kid out of the sympathetic dominant or the fight or flight state. We'll do the sacral pump on a little child and take him out of that stress state into a normal functioning physiology.
Wow. That's so much corrective work that's being done. And so little of it would be required if parents had kids in a more natural way. I mean, they could still benefit, I'm sure, because like you said, I think in one of your videos, anytime we're working, like I sit here and work for hours on end, anytime we're working or sitting and we're doing so in an unnatural way where our body's not aligned, you're creating, I think you said in one of your videos, some like microscopic fractures, right, that happen to your skeletal system that have to be corrected because every single day we're doing the same repetitive movements.
Not fractures, but what's neat is, and this is the discs of the spine. get their nutrients through movement because they have a horrible blood supply. Okay. And if you're not moving, each one of those discs get compressed and more compressed and more compressed. And then that can cause an abnormal sensory input into the brain, which is going to trigger the muscles to be tight. And that limits even more movement. Wow. It's actually a movement deficiency syndrome that most people are suffering from if they're stuck in one position, not moving for a long time. And that's, and what's wild is that's one of the causes of non-communicable diseases. They say lack of physical activity.
Really?
But they're not saying, look, you need movement in order to have healthy stimulation of the brain.
They're not saying that.
No.
Okay.
No, they're not taking it to why movement's important. They're just thinking that it'll decrease obesity.
Wow.
They're not thinking that movement is actually going to change brain function, and that's going to help with depression and anxiety. Movement is going to help limb function, and that's going to decrease cancer risks.
Uh-huh.
Okay, movement is going to actually help the lung function. Okay, so that's going to not, the body's not going to need to adapt with higher blood pressure.
Okay.
I mean, movement is...
It's everything.
Oh my gosh.
That's everything, right?
I love it.
I mean, there's a doctor that we're gonna working on getting on the show, Dr. Katie Bowman, and she's a what is she focusing? She's like a body alignment kind of gal, and she's recently got rid of in her house couches and chairs and everything, and she'll do her work on the floor, like, you know, the Japanese style with the low tables, mm-hmm. and then she'll stand up and do her work, and she'll do her work outside, and she's removed a lot of these things in our homes that are damaging, where people come home from sitting in their chair all day and they're sitting on their couch and they're eating. So what she was saying is exactly that is, you know, when you're eating, you can sit on the floor, you can stand up, you can move around, and just getting more and more movement into your daily life instead of becoming these sedentary creatures that just sort of get sucked into this black hole of a chair or a couch. And all of a sudden 3 hours has gone by. I can't even sit here for more than 20 minutes without getting fidgety.
I know.
It's bizarre, isn't it? Wow. So, another question. How much more time do you have? Do you need to go, or do you have anything?
I got till 11.
11 o'clock. Okay. Says, hello, Kate and Justin. Thank you so much for your awesome podcast. I'm all the way here in Finland and listening to your every radio show since I discovered it this summer. I really like the broad spectrum of guests. Thumbs up for that. I really like and appreciate John Bergman's YouTube videos. By the way, you have over 300 videos on YouTube. Is that correct?
I think we're up 5 or 6. I'm not sure. Gosh. I know we're almost to 7 million views.
Oh, that is so cool. That's so cool. They're so educational with a pinch of humor. I have a question I'd like to get answered by Dr. Bergman. The problem is that my intergluteal cleft is crooked. Looking from behind, it veers to the left from bottom to top. No severe pain occurs in the area. My legs are not equal. The right one has a thicker calf, while the left thigh has more muscular. A personal trainer has made a training program for me that will even the imbalance in the musculature of the legs. I have just started the program, so no progress to tell about that yet. Why does the butt crack get crooked? Did we cover this on the last show?
I don't know, but this, it's not a crooked.
It's not.
No, it has to do with nerve damage. Okay. There's some type of nerve compression.
Okay.
Now what supplies the gluteal region and the main hip stabilizer is gluteus medius.
Okay.
So we don't know if one side is atrophied or the other side's hypertrophic.
Okay.
Okay. Typically one side's going to be the side that's shrunken down. Is the other side, the contralateral side, is going to be hypertonic or increase in tone to stabilize that unstable segment.
Okay.
And then with the atrophy of one side, usually that's going to be from compressed nerves in the low back or pelvis area. So you got to get the nervous system checked, like, primarily. Also, what she may want to look into is if she's getting flattening of the feet. Okay, or beginning bunion formation, because that means that the nerves or the intrinsic muscles of the foot are starting to flatten or weaken, and that's absolutely coming from pinched nerves in the low back.
Oh, okay.
And that's going to also change gait, which is going to change the muscle tone or the increase in tone, because this would describe the atrophy of that entire left side.
So does this kind of thing happen over the course of years, but we don't see it? because the way you're walking, you don't notice it.
Absolutely.
And then all of a sudden, it gets to a point where you start noticing things later on.
Yep. Yep. Okay. And then it's insidious, because a lot of people will think, well, my knee hurts because I'm 20, 25 now.
I'm getting old.
I'm getting old.
25 years old.
You know, or, you know, I'm sitting for a movie, you're a little stiff, or going up or down stairs. I mean, none of that stuff's true.
Okay.
Yeah. There's always going to be something, some reason for it. And 50% of low back issues are going to have a cervical component. There's going to be something going on with the neck.
So your style of chiropractic was sort of, was that coming from the BJ Palmer and the upper cervical work that he did? Is that the kind of
part of his?
Okay.
Yeah. I've taken parts of just about everything I'm studying all the time, but it's corrective care.
So a lot of the issues with the spine and the rest of the body can be not just with the spine, but the lower back and other areas of the body can be, I guess, a central focus of attention should be the upper cervical up in the neck area.
That has to be taken care of. Like, you've got to address it no matter what, because if that head's forward or there's a loss of curve in the neck, the curve in the neck is called the arc of life.
Uh-huh.
And that's one of the reasons is because the brainstem or cardiac and respiratory center, it extends below the skull and the top bone of the neck surrounds it. There's also the phrenic nerve, which is in the middle of the neck, C3 and 4 and 5, and that's the nerve to the diaphragm. So if you have altered position of those vertebrae, you're going to alter breathing. You're going to alter cardiac function.
And heart function, right?
Oh, my gosh.
The lungs, right?
Yep.
Is that why what you were saying, when the body curves forward, it's putting a pressure on the spine, but it's causing what's going on in the front of the body with the organs when you curve the neck like that and you're doing this?
Think of that. Yeah. When you have that rounding over the hump, that's a body adapting to compress nerves.
Okay.
This is also, and this is so cool, when you're looking at neurologic damage in kids. If you have a teenager that's a chronic sloucher,
okay,
that kid is going to have forward head carriage.
Uh-huh.
That kid may have had like a history of ear infections or headaches or sinus issues or breathing issues, all of which come from the neck. And so if the child may be adapting with forward head carriage to compensate for neurologic damage.
Isn't that wild?
Oh, it's so neat, because then you restore it and, you know, all of a sudden this kid who thought that they had learning disabilities or, you know, they antisocial or they had chronic sinus issues goes away.
You know, I was at the gym the other day and noticed a lot of people that are at the gym had their phones, and it was just, it's so interesting now that I've been getting treatment at your clinic, and you talk about the distance that the ear is over the shoulder blade and over the shoulders forward. You know, anytime I'm watching, if Kate and I watch a movie on TV or something, I'm seeing these people with their ears forward. And so I'm at the gym the other day and I'm looking around and there's two or three people and their heads, it almost looks like a 90 degree angle from their back to the back of their neck and the back of their head. And they're standing there looking at their phones. And I'm just thinking, wow, that the constant looking of the phone over the course of years is going to be causing these, whatever it is that's happening on a daily basis, at some point it's going to become something that they're going to have to deal with.
Buddy, you go back to that gal with the heart attack. That's it. You know, the parasympathetic, if that head is forward, you're literally pulling on the brain stem. This is why 100% of the cases with Parkinson's that come in to our office have got massive forward head carriage.
Really?
Because if that head is forward, it literally pulls the spinal cord. And that spinal cord, the top of the spinal cord is an area called the brainstem. And the very top of the brainstem area is this substance. It's called substantia nigra. That's where dopamine's produced.
Okay.
Now, forward head carriage, if that decreases dopamine production, that's one of the factors in Parkinson's. I'd love to see studies on that, and I haven't seen any. But what we find is by restoring the curve in the neck, you actually change the Parkinsonian symptoms. You can change the shaking. You change a lot. If it's from trauma, because Parkinson's can be from either neurologic damage or physical damage. If it's from neurotoxins from like vaccines or pesticides or something, that's harder to regenerate. If it's from physical trauma, man, you reposition the head, regenerate the disc, reverse some arthritis, and you can massively change the brain's input and decrease those symptoms.
Bizarre. When we had my x-rays, I think I had a reverse curve, right?
If you had a reverse curve, that's not a good thing.
That's not a good thing. Yeah, I think I had the beginning stage of a reverse curve.
Yeah. And I like you. I don't want you to have that.
No, right? That's less than amazing.
Well, and you'll see reverse curves in a lot. And the human being is not built that way. Uh-huh. To have a reverse curve means you've torn or injured a ligament called a posterior longitudinal ligament. So that's absolute evidence of trauma.
Okay.
And the only way to fix that is to restore the natural curve.
Okay.
And if that's left there, it's horrific challenges in the body later on, because that's going to tighten up the muscles, that's going to decrease the motion, and movement deficiency is going to cause the disc to get compressed, and then the bone is going to compensate to that unstable segment by growing bone spurs. This is why
bone spurs in the neck?
In the neck, low back, mid back. See, bone spurs are not, it's called degenerative disc disease or degenerative arthritis or osteoarthritis. Mm-hmm. None of those terms are accurate. The bone spurs that form are actually the body protecting an unstable segment. And if you regenerate the discs, and discs are alive, so they can regenerate, you can actually see the bone spurs reduce and go away. There's a law called Wolf's Law. Bones lay down where it's needed, resorb where it's not. And so, you know, a lot of people come in, oh yeah, my doc diagnosed me with bone spurs. And I'm thinking, well, you know, that means you've got long-term instability. Let's see if we can, if it moves, then we can regenerate the disc and get the bone spurs gone.
See what we can do.
Why not?
You know, one thing that I've had for the last probably 3 or so months, I'm not sure if this is a result of getting adjustments on a regular basis at your clinic, but I can no longer sleep with a pillow. Is that weird or is that normal?
No, it's totally normal.
It feels
totally
so
normal.
Abnormal.
Oh my gosh, that's the fun part.
Weird.
Because people come in and they'll say, what position should I sleep in, doc?
Uh-huh.
And you know, I just looked at their x-rays and they, you know, loss of curve, reverse curve, you know, lateral buckling. I mean, you know, just a mess.
Yeah.
And I'll say, well, I really don't know what position you should sleep in. Find something comfortable. Uh-huh. Because if you have a beautiful 45-degree curve in the neck, you're perfectly aligned, you're going to want to have a very small pillow when you're sleeping on your back. And when you're sleeping on your side, you're going to have a pillow about the width between your ear and your shoulder. Okay. So you're going to be in a somewhat neutral, comfortable position.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a reverse curve, loss curve, and while you're going through care, your spine is radically changing.
Uh-huh.
So you're going to have to change your sleeping positions, change your pillow, change everything.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Because you've been adapted to yucky. Now we're bringing you back to normal.
Cause I feel like when I'm, you know, sleeping and I have that pillow, it's pushing my head and neck forward. And when I turn to my side, I feel good. I feel good with the same pillow. But if I'm laying on my back, which is how I fall asleep, it just feels incredibly uncomfortable to have that push forward. And I feel like it's part of the reverse curve that's going on.
Oh my God. Wait till you see the post x-ray we get.
Oh, I can't wait.
Show in the post x-ray, you show everything regenerate.
That's why my pillow sucks.
Is that why? Yeah. Kate just came in and said, that's why. Kate says, that's why my pillow sucks. Wow. So you see that. People come in and they tell you that kind of thing.
All the time.
Isn't that bizarre? Do you have a pillow or what are your sleeping patterns like?
I've got a pillow that looks kind of like a U. It's almost nothing when I'm sleeping on my back, and it's a little bit thicker when I sleep on my side.
Okay.
Yeah. When I go to sleep, I'm out like I've been shot with a gun. I'm done.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're up very early, right?
I get up around four.
What time do you start adjustments?
To start seeing patients at 5 a.m.
At 5 a.m. Wow.
Yeah. It's kind of, I need to, because there are people that drive. I mean, these guys are getting up at 3:30. They're driving 2 hours to get to the office, mm-hmm. and then they've got to get adjusted and get back to work by 7.
That makes sense. We have some friends that listen to the show and come up from San Diego. And I see their stuff, and they're saying that all the time. They get up at 3 a.m. and driving from San Diego. I think it's like southern San Diego, and so it's a long way.
Mm-hmm.
So people are coming from long distances. It would almost be easier to come from New York and get a hotel and just be there. And but people travel from long distances here in Southern California.
Oh yeah, yeah. But we get people from all around the world. Yeah.
I have to ask you, what was the other day I saw you with a bottle of. What was it? The turpentine?
Ripple?
Oh. Ripple?
Turpentine.
Turpentine, yeah. Yeah. That yeah, was the...
There's an old protocol for candida and fungal infections that's amazing. You can't suggest it legally, okay? But you can show people what it is, have them do the information on a historical perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But immune systems, everybody has candida.
Mm-hmm.
It only becomes a problem if there's an overgrowth, and the overgrowth has to do with a weakened immune system.
Okay.
Sometimes you're going to need to do protocols in order to decrease the growth of the candida to allow your immune system to function normally.
Okay. To get on top of this.
Absolutely.
Overgrowth.
And one of the easiest ways to identify if there is a candidal or fungal problem is doing a spit test in the morning.
Uh-huh.
Where you got a clear glass of water next to your bed. Don't drink it. Okay. You just work up right when you get up. You don't brush your teeth. You don't kiss your sweetheart. You work as much spit as you can. You spit in the top of a cup. And if it clouds or strings or sinks, you know, there's going to be some type of a fungal problem.
Okay.
And one of the therapies that's historically recommended is turpentine.
Isn't that bizarre?
Yeah. And that's why, I mean, Dr. Dorothy Daniels is one of the keys on that protocol. And since we can't recommend it, but we do say, hey, look, this is where the research is. This is how to identify it. This is where you get it. I mean, you're not going to go to Home Depot and get the turpentine there.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't need to get organic turpentine because it's like an essential oil of a pine tree.
Uh-huh.
They don't use pesticides on pine trees. They've been around for a while.
Yeah. No need to kill those.
Yeah, you just need the pure gum spirits, okay? Uh-huh. And I think the one that I had was from Georgia. I think it was A-Force Products.
Yeah, but Diamond Forest or something.
Diamond Forest Products, yeah. And it smells phenomenal.
Does it?
Yeah, oh my gosh.
I've been intrigued by this.
Check out Dorothy Daniels on YouTube.
Okay.
And there's a number of different protocols that recommend it. Some recommend mixing it with honey. And they talk about the therapeutic effect is done off of one tiny teaspoon on most people.
Wow.
But, you know, look at the research behind it because it's phenomenal.
That's bizarre. Yeah, I would imagine people would want to do that because, you know, as you know, Kit Campbell does a lot of work in candida and the connection between cancer and candida and fungus and stuff.
I know. I love Kit. She's brilliant. She went on our last cruise with us.
I saw the video she did with you guys, too.
Phenomenal.
She's great.
Phenomenal. She's got a number of YouTube videos on that as well.
Yeah.
And she gets upset when I call her Candida Queen, but it just rocks.
Yeah,
okay?
Candida Queen. That sounds good.
Yeah. But Kit's cool.
So if people want to find out more about you and your work, they can look on your website or your YouTube videos to see if this is something they want to look more into, right?
Absolutely, yeah. All you got to do is type in Bergman and any subject or disease. Our YouTube channel is John B. like Boy Cairo.
Okay.
And the Owner's Guide site, it's owners-guide.com, which is just got everything possible there.
It's got, I was talking with Dr. DeWitt the other day, and it's undergoing a little bit of a change, but it's got all your research and all this, these incredible bonuses that you offer for people, right?
Yep. The handouts, the research is vital because when we make a statement, if I say vaccines have enough aluminum in there to cause neurologic damage and that they're grown in aborted human fetal cells, you're going to get online and say, you know, you're going to see these other websites that say, no, that's a lie. That's not true.
Quackwatch.
Hey, yeah. Oh, yeah. Quackwatch is just run by a complete insane wacko.
I know, right?
Okay. And these, so I make a statement and then have the data. So this way you can look up the data, the research, the journal articles. You know, when I talk about vaccines and I talk about Laura Hewitson and the animal studies, I bring that up so you can look it up. So this is, it's all based in fact.
And so when someone signs up and becomes a member of its owner's dash guide, right? Mm-hmm. What do they get? What happens when they log in for the first time? What do they see? And
all well, that? They get the first 7 days for free. So they can try it out, check out the YouTubes. They can check out the, they get all the handouts, everything.
Okay.
After that, it's $10 a month. And so it's, and they get the first run of all the videos. We have a discussion group on there. Wow. They can send me emails and ask me questions. And since it's part of a community, it's phenomenal. Wow. Then this is the only way I can answer the questions with, I mean, we get about 200 comments a day. And so when I answer a question on owner's guide, it's more in a forum type basis. So people can go in, everyone can see it. Because okay. Most everybody is going to have a lot of similar questions. Like, right. You know, I'm taking this beta blocker. How do I get off of it? How do I reduce this? My kid has ear infections. It's absolutely a phenomenal forum.
That is really cool. So, I mean, that's one of the things that I think that is so necessary for people today, because you're being bombarded with propaganda and, for different industries and vaccines and different health-related things. And I think it's important to invest in your health and invest in real information and learn about how to do things. I think it's becoming healthy is a process, and it's a long-term thing, and it takes people, it's a lot of work and effort. And I think, you know, if you start taking care of yourself now, it really does add up, and it becomes almost like this cumulative thing when you're older. It's amazing.
Brilliant. I mean, the leading cause of bankruptcies is healthcare cost.
People spending money
on damage. I mean, you're so right. Investing in yourself is it. Mm-hmm. Man, investing in that berry smoothie, investing in getting your nervous system checked, investing in the gym membership. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's most people who think they have health insurance, they don't. It's a medical reimbursement program. There's nothing that their health insurance is actually doing to promote health.
I know. They're just throwing more drugs at you, right?
I mean, I know. And you're right, man. Investing in exercise, nutrition, you know, healthy chiropractic care, you know, mm-hmm. just body care, maintenance. Oh, my God. You're always going to return a good investment.
And I think that it's important, too, because when you're doing these types of things, it's really simple to take care of yourself. It takes a little bit of work, but if you understand how to do the smoothies and how to do the juices, and you understand these things and why they're good, and the chiropractic care and fixing the structure and the alignment of the body, reducing stress, these are all things that once you sort of get the hang of them, it become a part of your daily. You know, every day I do my little rebounder and sauna there, and they just become a part of your self care every day and your maintenance. And it's really interesting because you see people. I remember David Wolf was saying this to. You know, look at someone 20 years older than you and see what they have and ask yourself if that's what you want. And you see someone who's 80 years old and they've taken care of themselves their whole life, and you see someone who's 80 years old and they haven't, most likely there's going to be a radical difference in how they live their life, what they're able to do, their mindset, their success, and everything else that goes along with living a long, healthy life. And it doesn't take a lot of work. I mean, you can just sort of do these things. You get used to them and they become a part of it. It's like taking a shower, right?
It's true. It's
easy.
Living healthy is a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And this is the Renaissance, man. You're it. I mean, this is the underground.
Yeah, yeah.
This is where you're telling people, oh no, you can reverse disease by healthy lifestyle choices. And what you're suggesting is the solution to, you know, 63% of all the deaths in the world.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. Golly, I just wish everyone would just do a handful of things, you know? It doesn't take much. Just do a little bit. Even if you're not into health, just do a little bit. Simple stuff.
And that's, it doesn't take much. I mean, when patients come in, they say, what vitamin should I take? So look, everybody needs a mineral supplement. Everybody needs vitamin C. Everybody needs vitamin D3, unless you live in sun.
Yeah.
Everybody needs an iodine supplement. It doesn't take much.
Yeah, you can do these things.
I mean, a year supply of iodine costs $30.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, easy, right?
Yeah. And it's in a water filter.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. It's so vital to realize that water is a pain reliever. Mm-hmm. You know, the $12 bottle of Tylenol, you know, get a big thing of water. It's better for you.
Completely. So people want to learn more about you, owners-guide.com, your YouTube videos, and BergmanFamilyChiropractic.com.
Yep.
I wanted to ask you too. I probably should ask you this off the air. Have you been scuba diving lately? Have you done any of that?
No, not for months.
Not for a while.
Yeah, I'm going to go at the end of June.
Over
to Catalina.
Nice.
God, so much fun.
Oh man.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Wow, good stuff. Okay, owners-guide.com and Bergman Family Chiropractic. You've got a great Facebook community as well, right?
Yep. Yeah,
people can join that.
Absolutely.
And people can come around. So if people want to contact you that don't live in the area, I meet people all the time in your clinic that come over from New York, Europe, South America. How do they do that if they want to figure that out?
They can get it through BergmanChiropractic.com or owners-guide.
Okay.
Or call the office.
Okay.
You know, we're in Huntington Beach. Bergman Family Chiropractic.
And they could get those questions answered.
Absolutely.
How do I get there? And there's hotels around too, right?
Oh yeah. And that's what our staff does most of the day. They'll find out what they're going through and they'll arrange some type of, you know, where the closest airports are, where the hotels are, and what our protocols are.
Awesome.
Yeah. And we just had a guy come down from Silicon Valley. And really cool guy, but you know, he's a computer guy, so his hands are going numb, and from carpal tunnel, and that's an easy fix.
Have you seen the recent news reports of kids having carpal tunnel in their thumbs now from texting?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Super easy to fix.
Wow.
Yeah, it all comes from the neck. So. Wow,
that's amazing. That's amazing. I've had some incredible results. Whenever I'm adjusted with you, it's, It feels like, it's weird because it feels like you're being sort of snapped back into a state that you should be in all the time. Like it's like your default state and you're thinking, wow, that feels amazing. And I should always be in that state.
Yeah. We're bringing people to normal.
It's weird.
Yeah. Our goal is to get you to not see me.
I know, right? Working yourself out of a job.
That's good. You know, the old days, you used to pay the doctor when you were healthy.
Yeah.
You'd stop paying him when you felt bad.
Yeah, I know, right?
I like that.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I wanted to ask you, too, one quick question before we're leaving. When I'm being adjusted, when I was first being adjusted on a regular basis, I would go and sometimes we'd have multiple adjustments per day. And I think you recommend a couple hours in between.
Yep.
So we would go and I would get adjusted and I would crack like crazy. 2 hours later with Dr. DeWitt, crack like crazy. Mm-hmm. And now I'm cracking less and less.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening there?
Can we use something other than crack?
Yeah, well, adjust or the sound or whatever.
No, but you're right. See what that pops noise is? It's pressure building up and pressure releasing.
Okay.
And what we're doing, we're actually changing brain function or changing proprioception, your body's view or your brain's view of the body's position in space.
Okay. So you're changing that.
We're absolutely changing it. And if the joint is misaligned, okay, there's a huge amount of pressure built up. So when we put that back, it's a little pressure release like a, okay.
Okay.
And so the more, in alignment it is, the less pressure.
Okay.
So it either means that with the less pops, either you're severely dehydrated, which I know you're not, or we're getting closer in alignment.
Okay. Well, I'll take the latter.
I think so, too.
That's amazing.
That's why we do the post-x-rays, to document it. But then that's what we do with people that come from, you know, out of the state or out of the country. We'll do 3 or 4 adjustments a day, and they got to be separated by a couple of hours. It's incredibly intense.
Uh-huh.
But the results are guaranteed, and it's phenomenal.
Wow.
Because it's such an aggressive program. And, but I mean, you know, you want to see fibromyalgia, arthritis, all that stuff go away. You do. Blood pressure normalizing in a couple of weeks. You know,
there was a lady that Kate and I saw in your place, and I forget what she looked like, but she was walking very strangely. And I was wondering, wow, what's going on there? But then come to find out that someone else, we got to talking, which is so cool about your clinic, is that you sort of sit with everybody else. And you can make conversation and things. And someone else was telling us that I think 6 months prior to that, this lady had been coming and see you for 6 months, but she was in some sort of wheelchair and couldn't walk.
Oh, yeah.
And so I thought, oh, she's walking strangely, but
she's walking
from a wheelchair. I mean,
yeah, yeah. That happens a lot.
Ah, that's amazing.
It's just the human body's natural state is health.
Mm-hmm. It wants to be that.
And most diseases aren't diseases, they're the body adapting. And since the nervous system controls and coordinates every function of the body, you focus in on clearing the nervous system first, detoxing the system later, getting appropriate movement, and the body is healthy.
It just
normal.
Wants to, yeah, it's a normal state. Like, yeah. That's how I feel when I get adjusted. It's like I get snapped back into this state that I should always be in. It's just, it feels amazing.
I love the way you word that. That's perfect.
Yeah, it's just amazing. All right, we should go because you got to be gone and I have to pee. We've drank all this green juice. So I want to thank everyone for joining us in the chat room. Really, really appreciate it. This was, make sure I get this correct, extremehealthradio.com/375 with Dr. John Bergman, bergmanchiropractic.com, owners-guide.com. You also have the arthritisreversalsystem.com, mm-hmm. which is really cool. We didn't even talk about that. So anytime you want to be on the show, please
really
let me know.
This is so much fun because I mean, this is the health renaissance. This is where people get their information.
Waking up.
Oh my God. I loved it. I like hanging with you. I like you.
Oh, thank you. Likewise. And also if people are in the area, you're still doing talks at Living Temple, right?
Yep.
Awesome. So that's once a week or once every other week?
Every other week at the Living Temple and every Tuesday night at our office.
Awesome. Every Tuesday and every other week at Living Temple. Good stuff. Good stuff. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget to check us out next Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific time at extremehealthradio.com/live to join the chat room and make some friends and get your questions answered. Sorry I wasn't able to ask all the questions in the chat room today. I had to keep a good conversation going. It's difficult to do all these things at once. But next time when we have Kate here, we can take care of that. So appreciate it so much. extremehealthradio.com/375. Have a great weekend, everyone, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
Hey, everybody. This is Josie, Justin's mom. Don't tell him, but I know he would absolutely be really happy if you would sign up to his free weekly newsletter. And don't forget to share this with all your friends. This is the buzzing bumblebee signing off.
That was so good.
That's where we get the bumblebee.
Oh my gosh.
Thank you for listening to this episode.
It's time to go for now, but our mission does not end with this show.
Justin and Kate will be back with another interview packed full of ideas, discoveries, and unique ways to regain your health.
Head on over to extremehealthradio.com/subscribe and instantly download our free gift too that contains cutting-edge strategies to start making healthy lifestyle changes today.
No material on this blog is intended to suggest that you should not seek professional medical care. Always work with qualified medical professionals, even if you educate yourself in the field of live food, nutrition, and alternative medicine. I'm not a doctor, nor am I offering readers medical advice of any kind. None of the information offered here should be interpreted as a diagnosis of any disease, nor an attempt to treat or prevent any disease or condition. While information in this blog is discussed in the context of numerous conditions, it can be dangerous to take action based on any information in this blog or to start any health program without first consulting a health professional. The content found here is for informational purposes only and is in no way intended as medical advice, as a substitute for medical counseling, or as a treatment / cure for any disease or health condition, and nor should it be continued as such. Always work with a qualified healthcare professional before making any changes to your diet, prescription drug use, lifestyle, or exercise activities. This information is provided as is, and the reader / viewer assumes all risks from the use, non-use, or misuse of this information.